the Lunar New Year with a display of two rare books featuring images and texts of China from the 17th and 18th century, and a show of photographic images from the mid-19th century. I spoke with Georgia Prince, rare book specialist, about the history and story behind these taonga. I'm Sue Berman, and this is Real Gold.
Principal Curator Printed Collections.
Thank you very much.
That's all right.
And so what can you tell us about these wonderful books?
Well, the two books in the case at the present are both printed in the 17th century, and they both really have a Dutch connection, even though they're about China. So they're both very early travel books showing European, particularly Dutch, interest in China. And they follow really the pattern of the growing Dutch trading interests in the world that occurred in the 17th century once they'd gained their independence from their Spanish overlords. They were sort of ready for expansion in the world. And in particular, in the East, the Dutch East India Company was established at the beginning of the 17th century. And one of these books is really describing an embassy by the Dutch East India Company to China in order to try and gain some trading concessions. And that's the one by Johan Neuhoff, which we have a Latin edition in the case showing that one, but which was first published in Dutch in 1665. And in that, Neuhoff, who was a member of the expedition, the embassy, writes up a story of where they went in China. And more importantly, possibly for us now, he illustrated it with numerous engravings, copper engravings, of images of China. And these were really among the most reliable images of China to come into the West ever. Before that, there were stories, many of them fantasy stories, about what China was like and who was there, but not really documentary drawings on the spot of what was there and what the towns looked like and what the transport looked like and
people.
What the people looked like. And so from our point of view now, we've focused really on the drawings in the case, showing one of the pages with engravings of a town on the Yangtze River. And so that's one of the books in the case. And the other book in the case is sort of related to it because it's an English atlas, again showing views of China, which was published by the same publisher who published the English version of this Dutch embassy. And because he had such a success with this book, he embarked on a whole set of other projects around geographical travels around the world. And he produced this thing called the Atlas Chinensis, which is a compilation of different people's voyages to China, many of them Dutch, and with lots of engravings as well, because they were so successful. And again, a lot of those are actually Dutch, because they were really the European country that had the most to do with China at that point.
And are they sort of maps as well as...?
There is one map at the beginning, that, although it calls itself Atlas Chinensis, most of it is actually views, drawings, which are translated into engravings, but there is a map at the beginning. And quite an accurate map, really, although the names often don't equate to the names of Chinese towns as we know them now. But they were the names by which they were known, you know, to Europe for a number of years.
In translation, brings me to this question around these various translations.
Yes,
so
that's
you mentioned
right. Yes, well, both, Latin, yeah, Latin Dutch, is, yeah, was still really... almost the international language of scholarship, even in the 17th century. Latin was seen as a bit like English is today, as a sort of international language that you could expect people who were in that sphere of society to be able to understand. So it was translated from Dutch in the original edition into English and French and Italian, I think, and Latin. So the Latin edition comes out 3 years after the first Dutch edition, and that's the one that we have in our collection. But they all had the same illustrations, engravings, and they're all done by the same Dutch publisher. No, that's not right. The Latin one is done by the Dutch publisher. The English one is done by Mr. Ogilby, who I described before with his Atlas Chinensis. Yeah, that's...
Would they have been expensive books to produce?
Yeah, they would always have been expensive, absolutely. Expensive to produce, expensive to buy. I mean, in the 17th century, not many people had the wherewithal to buy books anyway, and these ones would have been expensive with all those engravings because it would have cost them a lot to make them. Yeah, undoubtedly.
And so how did it come to Auckland Libraries?
These two came from Sir George Grey, and as many of our books from that period do, although there is another donor, Henry Shaw, who also gave us a lot of books from the same period, but these are Grey's.
Are they relatively sort of unique items?
Or well, they're unusual. I mean, because at this point, all books are printed by hand. So that in itself means that the process for making them slows everything down. And certainly not like the print runs that we are used to now for books, because the whole thing has to be done by hand. And printing engravings is a different process from printing type. And so if you're going to print lots of engravings, you're really upping the ante in terms of the work that you have to do, but also in terms of the costs, because paper is expensive, but these are actually produced from copper plate. You know, the engravings are made on copper as their original, as their medium, and that's not cheap either. So, you know, you're not going to have large numbers of these editions. We don't know exactly how many were printed.
And were they based on sketches?
They're based on sketches.
Right, that came back from
that came
the travellers.
Back. So Newhoff apparently sent the images back to Holland, and it was his brother who was involved in getting them engraved and reproduced. I mean, he headed off again. He was seems like he was an inveterate traveller. And he headed off back to... I'm not sure if he went back to South America. He'd been in South America before he went to China, which is pretty amazing in itself for the 17th century. And he actually went missing in Madagascar about 10 years later on another voyage, and nobody knows what happened to him. But I mean, those are the perils of exploration at that period. So, you know, his life seems to have been extraordinarily adventurous, but came to an unfortunate end.
So we are displaying this material by way of celebration of the Lunar New Year, Year of the Pig, from the Heritage Collection, and alongside these two books up on the wall are some very interesting photographs taken by John Thompson.
Yeah. So these are reproductions from a four-volume book, which shows illustrations of China, his photographs of China. So John Thompson was an Englishman, quite young when he headed off to the Far East, and he travelled through Southeast Asia as well as China. And he left England, I think, in 1862, and was about 10 years away taking photographs and living fairly much as a local in China, and travelling around with all the cumbersome equipment that you had to travel with if you were a photographer at this period. This is early photography. Yeah. This is, you know...
Glass plates.
Yes, and all of the paraphernalia involved in processing the photographs. And he produced the set of four volumes of his views in the 1870s. And we've reproduced three of the photographs or the plates from the books on the wall for people to look at. But we do actually have the original four-volume set. And yeah, they're really very much more, I suppose we might think of them as early documentary photography. You know, that he's really just traveling around taking images of all sorts of people, places. And this definitely is images of China as it was in the 1860s, with people, temples, you know,
described.
Buildings.
Does he
does have a text. He does have a text with it, although generally speaking, people read Thompson for the, well, read Thompson, look at Thompson for the photographs, because he's so admired, really, by photographers and by anybody probably who was interested in that period. Because he's so, what's the word? I mean, they're such beautiful photographs, but they're also sort of very generous photographs somehow. I was going to say non-judgmental, but it's not like people to take photographs as if they are judgmental, but they're very...
Well, they can be staged
They
or
can
somehow.
Be staged, and I mean, to a degree, they have to be staged in the 1860s because...
You have to hold still,
exactly, otherwise you're just a blur, or you don't even appear in a photograph if you move quickly, you've gone because of the exposure times required. But they don't look like that, you know, they look very candid, I suppose is the word I'm looking for. So that's 200 years, really, after the two books and the cases, yeah.
Amazing. Wow, what a great offering. Thank you so much for your insights once again.
Pleasure. Thank you.
I'm sure people will enjoy coming to have an opportunity to view
them. Yes.
To feast your eyes on this content, you're welcome to find us on Level 2 of Tāmaki Pātaka Kōrero, the Central City Library, in the Heritage Collections Reading Room.